You ready? We're gonna call the meeting to order. We're on teleconference now, beginning to call the meeting to order, the House Judiciary Committee at 2:10. We do not yet have a quorum, but we'll use this as a work session because we have kept people waiting long enough. I apologize, we were in session on the floor and have just recently gotten free. We have people in various sites. We are going to be taking up House Bill 41. Present now are Representatives Cott, Representative James, and myself, Representative Porter. House Bill 41, concerning civil liability for skiing accidents. We have another anomaly. The Senate and the House Judiciary Committees are taking up this bill at the same time, which makes it a very interesting thing for witnesses who want to testify. What I will endeavor to do is free up three or four people who are here in Juneau so that they can testify and then take their hat in hand and head to the Senate chamber so that they can do the same thing. So with that in mind, I would like to first call Fred Turton, the Juneau Ski Club. Fred, before you begin, let me, for the record, indicate that Representative Phillips has joined us at the table. Thank you. We have a quorum.
My name is Fred Turton. I'm currently director of the Juneau Ski Club. I've been a race coach for over 20 years with over 30 years of ski experience. I'm a level 3 certified coach. I'm a fully certified PSIA instructor. I am a member of the National Development Committee. I am also a member of the National Course Approvals Committee. I am a member of the Youth Guidance Programs in the U.S. And I'm also a member of Alpine Officials as a FIS Technical Delegate, one of 40 in the country. I'm here to speak to you today to support the bill that is in front of you. And I'd like to address you in with three different hats on, really. One is a ski coach, first of all. That's what's closest to me currently. I'm in charge of 130 youngsters on the mountain, with the corresponding number of parents that go with that. And one of our primary goals is to provide challenge and encourage adaptability in the youngsters. Our terrain here in Alaska provides a wonderful opportunity to teach that adaptability. That really, our best teacher for the young skiers is the mountain. If we look currently at those skiers in Alaska who are skiing at the international level, like the Hillary Lins, the Tommy Moes, a substantial amount of awareness towards Alaska, if you will, is brought to us because of our skiers. And that's because of our mountains. This is not Minnesota, this is not Wisconsin. We're skiing on mountains that do provide risk. We have cliffs, we have chutes, we have drops, we have bowls. We have varied terrain from run to run, from day to day. This is what really provides us an opportunity to create good skiers. Once again, the mountain is our best teacher. Another thing when looking at this bill that's very interesting to me is that one of my real goals when working with youngsters is to teach personal responsibility. Whether it is to be on time, whether it is to be, to understand and follow the ski area policies and rules. And with that, the kids are not only learning how to ski better, but they're becoming more responsible young individuals. And with a bill like this in place, it provides us with an opportunity to have guidelines, not only for the ski area as to what we're providing, but it also gives back to the athletes and says, you are responsible. The other concern that I have as a ski coach is that skiing is not accessible to everyone due to cost. Having been involved in skiing for a number of years, it's interesting for me to see how much ticket prices have gone up. There are places in this country now where you can lay out two $20 bills and it's not enough to get you on the mountain. That's a concern. And yet, on a day-to-day basis, for me to bring athletes up on the hill to potentially breed our next Olympic champions, with that cost escalating and increases in insurance values due to litigation, it's going to make it impossible for skiing to be accessible. Another area that another way I would like to address this is as an alpine official. As a technical delegate of the FIS, or the Federation of International Skiing, I travel throughout the country and the world officiating ski races. One of my responsibilities is to look at courses as a member of the Course Approvals Committee. I note courses. Is this course safe? Is it wide enough? Does it provide the terrain that's necessary? Does it meet the requirements? This is for one slope. Many slopes at the different areas in Alaska are homologated. Once that process is done as an official, one of my duties is to ensure that the competition takes place on that slope. I don't know how many of you had a chance to watch the Olympics, particularly speed events where Hillary won her silver medal. Right now, the cost of putting on an event like the Olympics to prepare one slope alone exceeded $250,000 in materials alone for netting, fencing, and protection of the protection. One of my responsibilities is to look at protection when we're stringing the long nets, 3 and 4 meters high, 300 and 400 meters long. What type of skirting is in front of these nets to protect these athletes at high speed? What type of padding is in front of the skirting to protect the athletes? What type of fencing is in front of the cabling that protects the athletes? So once again, we're at a place where we're protecting the protection. This is for one slope, $250,000. Injuries are inherent. With protection like this, we still have an athlete like Hillary Lind, unfortunately, out for the remainder of the season. It's inherent. Do we, without the passage of this bill, do we expect the ski areas to then do that to every slope, to nurture and groom and protect, hide the trees, pretend that there is no risk? It's not possible. It's not feasible. The cost of putting on the men's Olympic downhill alone was over $1 million. $1 million to host one event, 1 4-day event in that arena. How are you going to protect an entire ski area? Is that where we're going? And yet only 15 years ago, we were running similar events without the fence, without the need for the netting, without the need for all the padding. That's where skiing has gone. And it's going to make it more and more and more difficult. And it's made my job much more difficult as an official. You know, it's funny, I was reading a story once, back in the 30s, a guy was able to take out 50-cent insurance and hope he could break his leg so he could make $100, and that would buy his lunch money so he could continue skiing for the rest of the season once his leg healed. Now, without this bill in place, it's no longer funny. That doesn't exist anymore. Now we're looking at hundreds of thousands of dollars in litigation because someone was unwilling to take their personal responsibility. As a skier, finally, that's what concerns me the most. I've seen so many changes in equipment, I've seen so many changes in the direction of the sport and the quality of the facilities that the areas are able to provide, the quality of the grooming. The ski sport has changed dramatically. There's no way of getting around that. Yet I think the reason why we all do it is because it's fun. Because it provides us a freedom that we can't get in other areas of our life. I choose to go skiing. I choose to be out in the hill. I've also chosen it as my profession. And when we get to the point where we are no longer allowed to choose where we ski on the mountain, we no longer have an opportunity to choose whether we go over a bump, we no longer have the right to choose whether we can go around trees, and this is where it's going to take us if this bill is not passed. I have a real concern about that, because that's going to take away from my fun, and it's certainly going to take away from other young skiers that are coming up, and those of you who do ski. Please support our sport. We've got a wonderful opportunity in Alaska, and thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you very much. Fred, were there any questions for Fred before? Okay. Fred, thank you very much. Next on the list here in Juneau is Christy Heron. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd like to thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak on this issue. For the record, I am Christy Heron. I live here in Juneau, and I'm a skier both at ski resorts and in the backcountry, and I would like to speak in support of H-41. As I understand it, this bill will still hold ski areas responsible for those things that they can monitor and control, but it would recognize that there are some things they can't control and shouldn't be held liable for. This just seems like common sense to me. I'm always impressed when I do go to a ski area at how much the area operators do for their customers. They put up signs to make sure we keep our ski tips up and red poles crossed at dangerous spots and do avalanche control, etc. After skiing mostly in the backcountry, I always feel very pampered and well taken care of when I go to a ski area. But I never feel that my responsibility to take care of myself is abdicated because the area is accommodating my recreational desires. If I'm injured through the negligence of something that the area could have prevented, then they should be held responsible. If it's an inherent risk of the sport, I'm prepared to handle that myself. Those who aren't should perhaps take up another less risky sport. If they don't, they will drive liability and costs up so high that none of us will be able to ski at a ski area. I feel that skiing is an important component of winter recreation in Alaska. This legislation will help keep skiing affordable and available to Alaskans. I fully understand the inherent risks associated with the sport of skiing, and I do not feel that a ski area operator can or should mitigate them all. I do not want to see skiing unreasonably controlled, restricted, regulated, or jeopardized due to litigation. Please vote yes on HB 41. Thank you again for your time.
Christy, thank you. Are there any questions? And then thank you again. Next here in Juneau, Paul Swanson. Are you impressed?
Yes, I am.
you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Paul Swanson, and I manage Eagle Crest Ski Area here in Juneau. I am also on the board of Alaska Ski Area Association, and I'm speaking for them as well. I'm here in support of House Bill 41. And I guess I want to point out that if we look at it, in almost all sports, there are inherent risks. If we, to name a few, basketball, football, baseball, volleyball, swimming, hiking, jogging, rollerblading, skateboarding, all of those have inherent risks in them. While we recognize that the inherent risks in skiing, there are also responsibilities that fall on the ski area operator as well. And I feel that this bill helps define those responsibilities. This bill would help all the skiers in Alaska, from the single ski tow operator up to the largest ski area, which presently reports only 120,000 to 130,000 skiers a day. In the ski industry, twice that number would be required to be considered a reasonably large area. And basically, that's my presentation. I'm here in support of the bill. Be glad to try to answer any questions.
Representative Green?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul, I probably should have asked this of Fred when he was testifying earlier, because he mentioned the price, you know, the fact that the lift tickets are getting higher and higher every year. And as a skier, I recognize that when I go out skiing. I'm just wondering, however, if there was a limitation on your liability, how that might actually be reflected in lower ticket prices and lower insurance rates. As I understand, there are not that many insurers in the country that write policies for ski areas, and that any individual action that your ski area may take probably would not have any effect on your insurance rates.
Well, in the insurance rate or the ticket rate?
The what you pay for a policy, which, you know, granted, the policies go up and could be reflected in higher lift ticket prices.
Unfortunately, at the present time, Eagle Crest is not even a money-making proposition. And so to say that it could reflect back its ticket, I couldn't say that. But you're right, there are only like two real large players in the insurance industry for ski areas, and there are two or three smaller ones. But there are mainly two main players to buy insurance.
Okay, so the passage of this legislation wouldn't necessarily mean any reduction in the cost of skiing to the.
I could not say that. Certainly not in my case, because we're not making money at the present time.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Is that me? Oh, that's Raga. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we might as well get Raga up here, and then we can get
so
ready to
get out of the way.
We will right after this. Would you please tell us who you are and share your wisdom and please testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Raga Aleem. I'm Special Assistant to Commissioner Olds in the Department of Natural Resources. We actually had a very specific comment with respect to the bill. We support the bill generally. We had as it came out of the House Labor and Commerce, there was a change to the bill that we wanted to bring to the committee's attention and offer a suggestion for a change, perhaps, and it's on the top of page 5, and it's section 0545040. And it has to do with the method of approving a plan of operation. We worked on the Senate side to modify the original bill in a way that we think would work better in terms of a framework for getting the appropriate party approving an operational plan. In short, the ski areas will either be on federal land, state land, or private land. Our view was that in each of those cases, a different authority should be approving the plan. In the case of federal lands, naturally the federal agency, whether it's the U.S. Forest Service or BLM, could approve the plan. In the case of private land, it seemed appropriate that the Commissioner of Public Safety could approve it. But in the case of the state land, where the Department of Natural Resources really is the land manager, for instance, at Alyeska, it's been previously owned by the federal government, and the U.S. Forest Service has been managing that. By next season, the Department of Natural Resources, and more particularly the Division of Land, will be managing those lands. We thought it would be appropriate that our department be approving those operational plans. So that was sort of the framework that we had suggested in the Senate and was initially reflected in the House version, but then subsequently got changed. And we think that that model might work better and offer that for the committee's consideration.
Thank you. We will be taking up, I know, several amendments at the conclusion of testimony, so we have that in place so that we can consider it. Now, sponsor.
This is the first I've heard of it, and
I apologize.
And it's caught me unawares.
I apologize for that. What happened was it. Frankly, the change in here, I missed that, and when it came to my attention, I initially sought to speak with Representative Mulder, who had, I think in the Labor and Commerce, had worked on, I was told, had worked on some of the revisions as a subcommittee in Labor and Commerce. I was trying to find out sort of the background of the change and have not had any luck reaching him over the last couple of days. So I just came as a matter of, I was hoping to avoid catching people off guard, and sorry I didn't speak to you, Representative.
If you could prepare an amendment for us, we can take it up before we pass the bill.
I'll write something up for your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Is it your intent to pass the bill out today?
No.
It might have been a gleam of possibility earlier, but I don't think so. Okay, would you like to make a statement?
I would.
We have the sponsor at the table, and the sponsor would like to tell us about the bill, and please do so, Representative Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I realize that this is a little different procedure for hearing a bill to take the testimony first, but hey, whatever your call is. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Representative Gail Phillips of House District 7. Thank you very much for scheduling the bill for a hearing. The bill was the subject of a hearing and teleconference in the Labor and Commerce Committee, from which the committee substitute passed with a 5-2 vote. I might add that while House Bill 41 is being heard in this committee, its companion measure, Senate Bill 44, is also being heard right now in Senate Judiciary and this will probably explain to you the comings and going of witnesses as they try to attend both hearings. The goal of both bills is to enable a large number of Alaskans who enjoy downhill skiing to continue to do so at a reasonable cost and under safe conditions. It also is attempting to promote economic development within the state and an effort to keep and attract additional jobs here in Alaska. The closing down of a large in-state provider of jobs is something we should all try to avoid. House Bill 41 is comprised of three parts. The first part sets forth the duties of ski operators and skiers. The second part deals with liabilities that arise from violations of these duties. The final part indicates that there are inherent risks of skiing that are the responsibility of the skier. House Bill 41 expands the definition of inherent risk and provides additional liability protection for ski area operators by imposing additional safety duties on ski area operators and imposing duties on skiers. This bill is supported by a wide range of Alaskans. We have letters of support on this bill and Senate Bill 44 from the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, the Alaska Hotel and Motel Association, Days Inn, West Park, Anchorage Hotel, and the Alaska Ski Areas Association. Before proceeding, Mr. Chairman, I have a minor amendment that I'd like to make to the bill, and it will be passed out to all of you. The committee has copies of an amendment dated 3-1. This amendment first came up as a result of concerns expressed by my constituents who are members of the Kachemak Bay Ski Club of Homer, a small nonprofit club with a rope tow on a hill near Homer. On one hand, the ski club wants to comply with the provisions of House Bill 41. On the other hand, there was concern that strict adherence to the bill as written would cause the club to cease operation. The bill sets forth the duties of ski area operators, page 5, lines 1 through 7. The Kachemak Ski Club is willing to live with these duties. However, the standards set forth on lines 8 and 9 for the qualifications of the ski patrol would be a burden to the club, particularly as they pertain to levels of medical training that go beyond what are normally associated with first aid and would require someone to go to Anchorage during the summer and receive costly training. This would create a significant problem for the club, which has no paid employees. Accordingly, I had requested an amendment to lines 8 and 9 that would have excluded Kachemak Bay Ski Club from the ski patrol standards only. There is no exclusion from the main body of ski operator duties in lines 1 through 7. Exclusion was to be as narrow as possible and consisted of three parts. The ski operator used only a single rope tow, the vertical lift of the tow did not exceed 500 feet, and that the operator was organized as a nonprofit corporation. I subsequently became aware of a similar problem in Anchorage with the Russian Jack Springs ski area. The amendment for Kachemak Bay Ski Club would have equal import for the operation of Russian Jack Springs with the addition of the word municipality as an alternative to nonprofit organization. I would ask for adoption of this amendment. The bill before you was passed out of Labor and Commerce Committee as a committee substitute because of the work done by the subcommittee. The vote in the full committee was 5 do pass and 1 do not pass. You will see that this bill has 0 fiscal notes. This time, I also would like to express my sincere sympathies to those families who have suffered tragic losses as a result of skiing accidents. I am not here to try to absolve anyone from blame, but I do what I can in the legislative process to work for what is best for all Alaskans. And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Heiser, and Mr. Gravel are here today to provide technical assistance if we have any questions.
Thank you very much, Representative Phillips, and I apologize for not calling for that initially. It now strikes me why I thought we were having a rehearing, because I am on the Labor and Commerce Commission and Committee, and I've heard this before. So this isn't the first time, or I should say is the first time in judiciary. Thank you again for the statement. I think we have one more person here in general, and we'll get that accomplished so that everyone that needs to can get upstairs for the Senate committee hearing. And that is Richard Herring.
Thank you.
Committee members, I'm from Athabasca, and I don't ski myself. I've been a couple of times, but we're looking at the development of Hatcher Pass. In fact, I believe it's a corporation from outside that had won the right to develop that area. I'm here to testify against this bill, and I'll tell you why. Because, first of all, it's going to increase the risk of everybody that goes skiing. Right now, our ski areas enjoy a good reputation, they enjoy a good insurance rate. I listened to some of the tapes from the Labor and Commerce Committee, and one of the comments was that the National Ski Area Operators Association keeps track of injury rates, and that's what they base insurance rates on. So, if this act is passed, and the main booster of this bill is the Alyeska Corporation that runs it, they'll be in a position to cut down their protection on the slopes because their exposure will be reduced. Therefore, there'll be more risks, more inherent risks to the people that go out there skiing. Now, as this translates into more injuries, their insurer will catch wind of this, will increase their insurance rates. So the first reason I oppose it is there's going to be more people like me and my children and my neighbors and family that are going to be injured or crippled in skiing, because we won't do our best to decrease the risk. Now, the first witness here, he's testified, and I think there's a great deal of misunderstanding of this legislation out there. I practice law, and I've been studying this thing for 2 days, and I still cannot appreciate all the implications of passing this. But he said he doesn't want a system where you can't go over those bumps and stuff. Well, that's not really true. If they mark the bump with an appropriate sign, you can go right on over it. But if you get hurt, you've assumed that risk. You're 100% negligent. The ski area won't pay you a dime. And the smart skiers like him know that. And they'll do whatever they want to get all the exhilaration they want. Hillary Lind was in an unfortunate situation, and I know she hit this restraining type of curtain. I wonder if that would have been there if they wouldn't have, you know, had all the spectators. At her level of skiing, there is breakneck speed. And they had hundreds of thousands of dollars of revenue produced by televising that kind of thing. And they brought people closer to the slope. They put up nets. I don't know. I think that's very far afield from what we would have here. And if we do have skiers in that situation, there again, they assume that risk. They know this is an inherent danger of downhill racing and going 100 miles an hour. The third reason I oppose this is that it means less employment for Alaskans. Without this bill, our ski areas will continue to try and provide the safest slopes. They'll employ a few more people. They'll educate a few more people. Right now, Alyeska, I understand, has a one-week training program before the season begins, and they'll keep doing that. They won't cut back on other things that they've cut back on. So those people who work there will be somewhat skilled. As Alaska builds a tourism, and Cebu is not holding back on Alyeska, they're jumping in with both feet. As that increases, there'll be more people with the technical knowledge of how to reduce risks, how to make things more safe,
and they'll keep trying to put that into effect. And the fifth reason, so we'll have more employment, we'll have more skilled employment. The fifth reason I think this bill should not pass is because it will increase litigation. I see this bill as a full employment plan for attorneys. And specifically in the Commerce Commission there, I know Mr. Lamb testified, and he testifies about the cost of litigation. He testified, and Mr. Chairman, please correct me if I'm wrong, but that a 1 week jury trial cost him $75,000 in costs. And that means all the motion practice that goes on before it, by adding now a new definition of inherent danger and risk of skiing, the Supreme Court's got to do its work all over again. And until the Supreme Court does, on a dozen cases maybe, so that you can use those cases as as an attorney, you look at these precedents and you try and figure out where your case is going to fall. And for us to develop enough Supreme Court precedents to see where all these cases are going to fall is going to take 10 years or more. For example, the 86 legislation is just now coming into the Supreme Court, I think, with the Valdez case. There's the first opportunity. But for the last 5 years, if there's been that much litigation, the attorneys have had to guess how the Supreme Court is going to interpret a lot of this stuff. So I see it as causing more legislation. Insurance costs and the risk of skiing isn't that frightful. It is a dangerous sport. Automobile driving is an inherently dangerous sport. And I estimate my costs, this is just the ballpark, and I ask all of you to do the same thing. How much does it cost you for automobile insurance so you can drive to and from work? If I drive 20,000 miles in a year, and I bill the state at 30 cents a mile to reimburse me my expense, they would write me a check for $6,000 for my auto expense for that year. Well, my insurance premium is over $600 a year. So my insurance on my car is more than 10% of the entire cost of driving. Driving is so important, it's a necessity for us. So driving costs more than 10% to insure. Well, at the Labor and Commerce Committee meeting, there was testimony that I believe here in Juneau that there's a $50,000 per year cost of insurance. Well, their revenues last year, the last time they reported from Skiery, was I think $780,000 in revenues. So if you divide $50,000 by $780,000, I think you get something like 7% of the cost of their income goes out to insurance. Well, that's not bad. That's less than the cost of driving a car and insuring that. So I think the present system keeps the cost of this dangerous activity on the activity itself. People running it can boost lift tickets $1. Many of the lift tickets here, I believe, are less than $20. But if you have a $20 ski ticket, less than $2 of that has to go to the insurance. And there's a great benefit to us. I imagine that only about 1 out of 10 cases, the people think about filing a claim. Because most of the things are piled there. Somebody falls down, they wipe out, they get hurt, they realize it's inherent risk, and they suffer the music. But those cases that do go into claims, the next thing I'd like to do, I know you have not much time, but I would like to propose as an exhibit, my strong urging is not to pass this bill. But if people on the committee think that some type of a bill is appropriate, I would say at least make the changes that are in this exhibit. And with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to present this to the committee to show a couple things that I think are very serious. I apologize that I only have one copy, and I have another copy for myself, and I'll just go through the changes that I think are very important.
Mr. Aaron, if you could do so expeditiously, as you point out, we do have revenue testimony today.
The first change, at the bottom of page 3, it says apportionment of fault. That paragraph ought to be eliminated because, and it reads as follows, if a person is injured as a result of an inherent danger and risk of skiing and negligence by the ski area operator in determining the percentage of fault, prior fact may not treat the inherent danger and risk of skiing to the extent it contributed to the injury as part of the fault attributed to the ski area operator. Well, that is a precedent that is unheard of in Alaska tort law. That is an impossible standard for a jury to apply. The first apportionment of fault says that a person may not bring an action against the ski area if the injury results from an inherent danger and risk of skiing. That is the law today. And what the second provision does is just create an incredible morass of possibilities. Because that paragraph, in combination with what is described in the definition section as the inherent risk of skiing, every single accident, whether it's negligence of an operator, is going to involve inherent danger and risk of skiing. By apportioning fault to the inherent risk and danger of skiing, what will happen is we'll start to apportion damage to things like the law of gravity, to curves. In automobile negligence cases, for example, if two drivers meet on an icy road and they know the road's icy, they've assumed the risk, if they're both negligent, the jury will say, there's 100% negligent here. Part of it's for one driver, part of it's for the other driver. And if the driver's negligent, he's only going to recover for the part of the injury that was caused by the other driver. And so the inherent risk of driving gets applied to both parties. This bill, the Cebu bill,
Mr. Aaron, if I could ask you to be a little more expeditious, you have several points to make, and okay, if you spend that much time on all of them, there will be no more time today for anyone else to testify. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next change at page 5, in paragraph A, says a ski area operator shall prepare a plan of operation for each ski season and shall implement the plan throughout the ski season. That should be changed to read, shall implement the plan, shall implement and follow the plan. This is a very ambiguous word. There's going to be litigation over that. I was talking with an aide here in the Capitol who said, well, that means, of course, that implies that they must follow the plan. And so it would save a lot of litigation in the future to simply insert, they must implement and follow. Next, that same paragraph should have another subsection. And that is this: if the operator or its predecessor had a plan in effect on January 1st, 1993, that plan shall operate as a minimum standard for that entity for skier safety in the future. And the reason that's important is because once this plan's adopted, Alyeska may cut back on its plan, make it less safe. And by putting this in there, you ensure that the state of the art that Alyeska has achieved, that Eagle Crest has achieved, will at least remain. And for that purpose, I've provided to each of the committee members a copy of the operational plan for both Alyeska and Eagle Crest, so you can see that that plan could be a standard for continuing safe operation. The next change is on paragraph 8. Subparagraph 5.
Which page are you on?
I'm sorry, page 8, which is section 4570 C. I'm sorry, I.
Page 8, line 21?
Yes, thank you, sir. And in that paragraph, the only thing I think you need to do is eliminate the word groomed. And the reason you should scratch out the word groomed is because at Alyeska, for example, many, many trails are not groomed, although they are heavily used. In fact, so that makes it incumbent upon the operator to mark hazards on trails, slopes and trails that are used by the people there. The next change is on page 9. And this warning should include the last sentence of the definition of inherent risk at page 12. And that sentence reads, the term inherent danger and risk of skiing does not include the negligence of a ski operator under Alaska Statute 54520B, or acts or omissions of a ski operator involving the use or operation of ski lifts. The reason this is so crucial is it really irks me when people give legal advice like this. As an attorney, everybody that comes to this resort is given the legal advice that, hey, there's lots of inherent risks of skiing, and you can't do nothing to hold this outfit harmless. When the manager of Alyeska was here, he said, we don't settle those cases against us because we don't want that precedent. Well, now, if someone is fairly, and we all make mistakes, and Alyeska is no exception, if they err, they're negligent, they hurt somebody, the person brings the claim and says, please pay my medical bill. Their attitude is, no, we don't want that precedent. What precedent? That they're responsible for their negligence. And so right here in the warning, they say, look, you can't make a claim against us for inherent things of skiing. But they don't tell them. They don't want to say that inherent danger doesn't include negligence of a ski operator. So if you're going to give patrons legal advice, give them the full picture. And finally, and that's all the changes that I would propose if the committee sees it necessary to add this, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Herron. Are there any questions? One question, Mr. Herron.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Herron, I do have a very brief question. Only requires very brief answers. Where do you practice law, and what type of lawyer are you?
I practice in Wasilla. I'm a very good lawyer.
No, I mean, what field of law?
I understand. I counsel injury victims. I tell some people they have cases, some people they don't. Workman's compensation, another personal injury. I do a few wills. I do a little bit of adoption type things.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I believe that that is all we have here in Juno. So I have a constraint that we might have already blown away, but we'll try. And the two in Homer, I will work the two in Homer, if you're still with us, into the list in Anchorage, so you won't be at the end of the list, but you won't be at the beginning either. So I believe that we have a C. Christensen in Anchorage that has a time constraint and needs to go first.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate your putting me first. I'm testifying as an avid skier, as the mother of a number of avid skiers, and also as a lawyer. And I should note that I am not a personal injury lawyer of any type. I do land law and know not much about personal injury matters at all. However, I have read the bill with my lawyer's hat on, as well as in my role as an avid skier, specifically at Alyeska. I've been to Eagle Crest a few times, but at Alyeska, basically, we ski every weekend during the ski season. We ski during summer ski camp. We ski at Christmas camp. We also ski outside the state for a couple of weeks each year, at least most years. I agree with some of the earlier speakers that inherent risks of skiing should not be the responsibility of the resort. But I'd like to say that the way that is defined in this bill includes many, many things that are in fact the responsibility of the resort. And therein lies the rub. I think all of us, as one earlier speaker, I believe her name was Christy, said that all we want to do is hold the resort responsible for what they control. Well, this bill would let them off the hook for an awful lot of stuff that is solely under their control. And this is a great concern. I'd like to tell a brief incident that occurred last year. My middle son, who is the best racer in my family, and he's four times a week right now, was lost at the end of the ski day. It was about 3:30 or 4. It was when it was already getting dark. It was in December. It was the same day that the little riser boy was lost. Husband went to Alyeska and asked for their help. They were nice to him, but they had no plan in place. In fact, they hadn't a clue as to what to do about this boy. As far as I could tell, this was secondhand, I should say. He phoned me in Anchorage and told me this. I called down and I asked to speak to the head of lift operations, and I was polite, and he blew me off. Lady, it just wasn't his fault. And I think that, and I respectfully ask you all to keep that in mind, if you're going to lower the level of responsibility this resort has. This bill essentially makes it their responsibility to put up signs. That's about it. You could be hit by a drunk snow machine driver who's an employee of the resort, and it wouldn't be their fault. The tower could fall on your head, and it wouldn't be their fault. Not under this bill. You could ski off a 100-foot cliff in the middle of the most commonly run area, and I don't think that would be their fault under this bill. I think that the words are right, inherent risk of skiing, and that makes sense. But you've got to look at what this bill, in fact, does. And this bill, in fact, places virtually all the responsibility on the skier and none on the operator. As I think when you look at it, the list of what the skier is responsible for is quite lengthy. The list for what the operator is responsible for essentially really seems to revolve around time. In terms of plans of operation, I don't know what they had in mind. I have worked with the Forest Service quite a bit, and I'm very familiar with their plans of operation, and they would not contain the types of information, I don't believe, that would have led to the adoption of a proper search and rescue plan. I don't believe that's required. Not the type that would have helped my son, because he dug himself out, nor the type that would have helped the poor riser boy. So I'd just like you to keep this in mind, and I'd like you to know I'm a very, very avid skier. We are a family of outdoors people. My husband's family were homesteaders in Alaska. They still live out in their log house on an island, and we are not wimps looking for croquet matches. We love to ski. We do a lot of backcountry skiing too. But this bill is really unbelievable. It is unbelievably bad. And I hope that you consider suggestions either to rewrite it or drop it in the garbage. I can only think when I see it, the saying that pigs get fed and hogs get slaughtered. And somebody deserves to be slaughtered over this, I think. So it's a strongly worded statement, but I've been there when my kid was lost and nothing was done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. Are there any questions? I see none. I would like to inform the rest of the people who would like to testify. I do not mean this to inhibit anyone's testimony, but we have this teleconference bridge only for the next 28 minutes. At 25 after, we drop dead. So with that in mind, let me next call Mark Bond in Anchorage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Bond. I'm a counsel for Elias Resort. I have a number of other roles in life, one of which is the National Legal Counsel for the National Ski Patrol System. I've been an avid ski patroller since 1972. Since 1978 at Elias Resort, I wanted to point out a couple of things. You know, I can respond to the previous speaker's comments, but I don't want to take up too much time in this teleconference. I do want the committee to be aware of, and I will file with the clerk here, that the Minnesota legislature is in the process now of going to precisely what this legislature is. They have proposed bills in both houses and Senate that read very similarly to what Alaska is looking at. Again, it doesn't surprise me because the proposed legislation is taken from the Colorado statute, and I am assuming that that's exactly what Minnesota did too. And I'd like to file with the committee a copy of both the House and Senate bills as proposed in Minnesota. I guess maybe what I'd like to do for the benefit of the committee, if possible, is simply be available for questions should you have any questions at this time. And I won't impose any more on the time constraints you have.
Thank you very much, Mark. We do have one question from Representative Davidson.
I'm sorry, the gentleman's name?
Mark Bond.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bond, a previous speaker talked about the things that are solely under the control of the operator. And would you agree with that statement? And if that is the case, what is your case as far as trying to make safe conditions out there for skiers, if in fact many of the conditions are under the sole, I don't want to say responsibility, but the under the
capability of the operator.
Yes, thank you, Representative. Those were among the remarks that I would have chosen to respond had we had additional time. She gave three examples, I believe. The first one was a drug snow machiner. You'll find that nowhere listed in the inherent risk of skiing. So the area operator would not be absolved from collisions between those who are on the hill and those who are skiing. That would be a simple matter of regular negligence. Claiming who should look out for who, et cetera. It's not addressed in the bill. As far as the lift towers falling over, the lifts, as you'll see in the bill and also in the other legislation, it's already in place concerning tramways, impose very specific requirements on area operators with respect to what they have to do concerning lifts. If the lift tower fell over on the skier, that certainly wouldn't be something covered by the inherent risk statute. The next item, I didn't catch all of it, but I believe it was falling off a 100-foot cliff somewhere in the middle of the ski slope. And that gets closer to the mark. And skiers need to understand that there are variations in terrain, both natural and artificial, and to the extent that those are visible, then those are inherent risks of skiing. But you also see, Representative, in the bill, this bill requires areas to mark. If you look at page 8, line 20, one of the other skiers had mentioned this section. On groomed slopes, they must mark forest growth, rocks, stumps, stream beds, trees, or other natural objects. If you move down to line 24, the ski area operator is likewise required to mark roads, catwalks, cliffs, or other terrain modifications not readily visible to skiers from a distance of at least 100 feet. So, in none of her three examples was she correct in saying that this bill absolves the ski area operator from liability. And there are other examples that could be addressed, but those are the three I caught from her.
If I may continue.
Certainly.
On page 8, would you please comment on eliminating the word groomed on just before slopes on line 21?
Yeah, I'd be delighted to do that because it makes no sense if you think it through. For instance, I'll give you one example. It says that you have to mark trees that are located on slopes. Groomed slopes. If you had to mark every tree at a ski area, you can take eucalypts as an example down there. I have a lot of trees. Alias in the lower part of the mountain has a lot of trees. If you remove the word groomed, you're going to have somebody out there, I suppose, with yellow ribbons tying them around every single tree on the entire mountain within the boundaries of the ski area. It makes much more sense to have these sorts of things marked on groomed slopes because those are the slopes that are going to be by beginner and intermediate skiers, and those who wish to challenge themselves more by skiing off groomed areas must understand that these things are going to be encountered, trees, forest roads, rocks, stumps, stream beds, etc. In fact, that's part of the exhilaration. I had someone mention to me the other day that they were looking at another outgrowth of the ski area, and one of the things that they really thought was great about it was that there was going to be a lot of tree skiing. In other words, there would be snow among trees that would be spaced somewhere between 15 and 25 feet apart. And if you had that kind of slope open to the skier or within their ski area boundaries, you would have to have a ribbon around every tree, I suppose. But it makes sense to have those sorts of things marked where your beginner and intermediate skiers are going to go, or whether any skier can go, should they so choose, on a low visibility day, for instance.
I guess we're asking questions like this these days a lot. Now, I understand that you're an attorney and you work for Alyeska, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I'm not directly employed by them. I'm with a private firm engaged by Alyeska.
Mr. Chairman, just one final comment question. Mr. Bond, I don't know if you have children, but as a parent, would you be satisfied if your children were skiers, and that and would you be satisfied that this was an exhaustive list of the responsibilities of the operator where your children would go skiing?
Well, I'm satisfied, and I do have children. And they'll start skiing shortly. They're 3 and 2 at the moment. And we've got the 3-year-old out on skis in the driveway this year, and I hope to have them skiing up on the lower slopes of the hill next season. So I do have that perspective, and I do care about that situation. And I'm satisfied in 2 respects. First of all, this bill contains a lot of direct responsibilities of the ski operator that are specifically listed in the statute. And then in addition, the area operator is required to get a plan which must be approved by one or more government agencies, and I'm not sure which one you'll end up picking, which is required to contain various aspects. And of course, the government agency is required to pass on it. Those plans of operation, I've seen them from a number of ski areas, cover a lot more than could be covered in any piece of legislation. So I am satisfied that this bill contains both specific constraints that are obvious and important, and also the ability of a government agency to be a watchdog over a plan of operations which will contain a myriad of things that could never be contained in legislation and are very specifically tailored to the individual ski area. I think that's important too. You could put something in a bill that would address everything in every ski area. Now you certainly do that in the plan of operations for a particular ski area.
Mr. Bond, would you give us your perspective on the comment that was made about the person who said that they did not want to set this precedent, the company that is?
Oh, yeah, I can comment generally on what goes around in the litigation community. I know Mr. Heron a little bit. He and I played on a softball team together a number of years ago. And he is a plaintiff's personal injury attorney in the Wasilla area. And it's well known among the trade that there are easy marks and there are not so easy marks in terms of litigation defendants. If you become known as an easy mark, i.e., pay readily on all the claims that come through as a matter of a business decision to get rid of it, and you'll get more claims. And if you pay on some that are obvious, and if you litigate the ones that are that you don't believe are your responsibility, then you get known in the trade as someone who is willing to make a defense. And that's very important in these times, especially when litigation costs can be substantial. Want
us
to develop a reputation as
mark,
and I think that's perhaps what he was referring to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Seeing no other questions, thank you very much, Mr. Bond. Next on the list is Bruce Reiser. Certainly can, Bruce.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to speaking. For the record, my name is Bruce Reiser. I'm a 24-year resident and I'm self-employed and a commercial fisherman for 23 years. In the last 2 years, the legislature's reviewed proposed inherent risk of skiing bill similar to this year's. However, this year, the ski industry is much more expensive polished campaign to convince politicians to pass the self-interest legislation. I listened to the Senate and House Labor and Commerce Committee and heard Cebu and other business interests support this bill for various reasons. I have seen this reasoning for passage of this bill change from the origin of intent was to increase tourism, along with to spelling out the responsibilities of the ski area and ski area operators, and increasing opportunities for investment money to come into Alaska, to keeping the ski lift prices down. To one more pointedly, to bar, into bar insurance, employee insurance, or liability insurance for the resort operator. He leaves one with the impression that this corporation that has net sales of over $7 million last year and a net gross of over $5 million last year cannot afford these costs. I have listened to Sabo's attorneys, Tim Lamb, during labor and commerce testimony, describe my son's death as an extremely serious incident. And Mark Bond suggests that Colorado's law was passed because of one lawsuit where a young man was paralyzed for life and successfully won a jury award for some $9 million. Of course, he didn't mention that the award was substantially reduced later, and that a large portion of the award was interest and attorney fees. Instead, he suggested the same theme, runaway litigation. His flippant comments about this young boy's accident are consistent with the wording of this bill that states, most injuries are minor, but some injuries and poor lifestyles and a few are very fatal. These injuries are ordinary, though unfortunate, consequences of the skier's choice to take part in the sport. Now we hear from the industry and Senator Tim Kelly that skiing is a dangerous sport. Really? According to John Heiser and studies, one death in 1 million skier visits is all that takes place in downhill skiing. The statistics include skiers skiing out of bounds and caught in avalanches. Alyeska has had four deaths that we know of on that mountain. In addition, Sabu was held responsible for the two young Garish boys' deaths. Furthermore, a jury found Sabu responsible for a tragedy that left the young man paralyzed for life. Although Mr. Grandinetti, Alyeska's risk manager, denies these facts, Alyeska is way over its quota deaths per skier visits. Mr. Grandinetti's comments do not surprise me because this is the same risk manager who supposedly investigated our son's death and stated that he didn't know where Bart had died. And when I asked, he misled me to an area some 100 feet away from the actual death site, which was a stream bed with several waterfalls, one of which was some 6 to 10 feet tall. If our son had died with this bill in effect, Sabu would probably have been successful in getting a summary judgment in their favor, for after all, stream beds are listed as an inherent risk. My wife and I are speaking from experience from dealing with this industry. We have tried to make some good come out of our tragedy. The only part of my son's body that we could donate were his corneas. I will never forget defense attorneys taking my wife's deposition and ending with them repeatedly questioning her over and over again about our son on the operating table and why we didn't have him cut apart in autopsy. Sabu's attorney finally leaned across the table, looked her straight in the eye, and asked, "You didn't mind them cutting on his eyeballs, did you?" Our attorney at that point called them to account, and their reply was, "The risers should have known that this was going to be expensive and painful when they brought suit." And this is the only thing Sabu's attorneys have been right about. As you can see, it is almost impossible to legislate or to spell out every and all situations where somebody can be injured. There are too many variables. But Supreme Court feels Alaska's inherent risk of skiing statute is fair to both the skier and the skier area operator. They know Alaska's legal system perhaps better than any of us. Is it right that lawmakers being lobbied by a self-interest industry try to change a law that only last year the Supreme Court says is fair? Listen to your constituents, not to money. Listen to Alaskans, not to people who are going to make a personal gain. And please remember to represent Alaskans, their interests, and their safety, and not be swayed by dollars and favors. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reiser, and please, again, accept the sympathy of this committee for winning your life's lost. Are there any questions? I see none. Thank you again, Bruce, very much. I'd like to ask, in Anchorage, Paul Brooks.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bruce Reiser again. Mr. Brooks, I believe, left. I don't know if he's upstairs giving testimony. Downstairs, we have a Susan Lowe is the only other person available to give testimony at this minute, unless some more come down.
Okay. I have scheduled before Susan, if she would hang on, one of the people in Homer. Let me check and see if they're still around. Do we have contact with Homer?
Yeah, Roger.
Okay, could I ask Roger Moss if he is still there to...
No. My name is Robert Moss, and good afternoon. I'm a lifelong resident of Homer, and I've skied for 40 years. In testifying, I would like you to please consider, when reviewing this bill in its final form, ramifications to the Kachemak Ski Club downhill ski area in Ropetoe and Homer. This, as you know, is a nonprofit organization and provides a source of recreation for many of the school-age children in Homer and the surrounding areas. The club feels that it can comply with all of the bill except for the ski patrol requirements. The amendment proposed on page 5, line 8 and 9 would allow us to continue operation. Thank you for your consideration, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Robert, thank you. I see no questions. While we're there, is Deborah Nye in Homer?
Yes, I am.
Could we hear from you, Deborah?
Yes, thank you. And as a member of the Kachemak Ski Club, I would like the committee to adopt a proposed amendment to House Bill 41. I feel, taking in consideration the size of our skiing area, Olson Mountain, less than 300 vertical feet with one rope toe, and a club membership of 38 families, it would be unfeasible and unnecessary for us to comply with page 5, line 8 and 9. It would be unrealistic for the club to have to provide a ski patrol with qualifications meeting or exceeding the standards of the National Ski Patrol. We support the concept of House Bill 41 and will meet the other requirements. If it became mandatory for us to comply with a ski patrol, then it would be impossible for the club to continue operation, and the ones really affected by this would be the kids in the Homer area. There is already little for them to do during the winter months, and they've come to rely on Olson Mountain being there for them on the weekends. It is affordable, healthy, clean fun that would be greatly missed. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. We have one question from Representative Norton.
Thank you, Deborah, for your testimony. I'm just wondering what short of us, you know, certified National Ski Patrol members, what do you have there in terms of some sort of supervision for youthful skiers or first aid for a skier who might be injured, or what provisions do you make for those kinds of situations?
Well, we have two members on the hill, adult members on the hill, one at the top and one at the bottom, always throughout the day to observe. And you can see from the top the entire hill where the people are skiing. And we do have a phone which is fairly close. If someone did get hurt in that situation, we would immediately close the tow down and respond to the accident if there was one to occur, and we would probably just carry on. They were not that far away from town, the hospital area.
Is the ski area operated on private property, or is it on Forest Service land, or where is it exactly?
Yeah, it's a private property that the ski club has purchased.
Okay, and is it just restricted to the members of your club, or can members of the general public or whatever come on and ski there?
No, it is not restricted just to members. Anyone can come up and ski.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
See no other questions. Thank you very much, Deborah. I think we have at least one more person left in Anchorage, Susan Lowe.
My husband has left his testimony for me to read, and it is quite lengthy, and I hate to take time away from other people in Homer. If you could give me an idea of how many more people there are, I'll either read this in full if I'm the last person to testify, or I'll cut a lot of it out.
We have no one else that I'm aware of in Homer. I'll leave a bit of time for a response if I'm wrong.
Okay. All right. First of all, let me just say, as far as my own testimony, I was hoping to testify for both of us. My name is Susan Lowe. I am a member of the National Ski Patrol. I patrol up at Alpha Flow here in Anchorage. I am also a mother of five children, all of whom are avid skiers. And I'm also I serve on several PTA committees. And I want the committee to know that I am against this bill being put into effect and support all the people that have talked today against this bill for the various reasons. I would just be reiterating the same things that they were saying, that it really does place all the responsibility upon the individuals. And when we're talking about our children who go and hope that they will have a fun time and hope that things can be controlled or looked after for them, I think it's wrong that this bill be put in effect to make them so responsible for things that are taken out of their hands. And as a PTA member, the many clubs that go down and put their kids on buses, hoping that it will be well-sanctioned and supported, I think there's a lot of limitations here that the bill needs to be revised. There's a lot of good in this bill. As a National Ski Patrolman, there are many, many things here that, as a patrolman, we want to the skier take the responsibility for himself. I know I sat here earlier with Paul Brooks and Mark Holland and four other people that I ski with on a weekly basis or see them in training, and they are all for the bill. I am against the bill, and it's because as a ski patrolman, we want people to be responsible. As a mother, I can see the other side of it, and also as a friend of the Grinders, I see another side of it, that you can't place full responsibility, and that's what this bill does, and that's why it's angered the people that are against it, because it sort of camouflages the real intent. The real intent is to take the responsibility out of management and put it on the skiers. And that's all I have to say for myself. If there are any questions, I'll read my husband.
Please go ahead.
I was just told that if I would like, I could just send this testimony on through the secretary rather than read it. Would you prefer that I do that?
Well, I'm looking at the clock, and we have about 3 more minutes of airtime. If it is longer than that, it probably would be just as well to have it in total than have half of it and then receive the rest of it in the mail.
Let me just bring out one point that he talks about. And first of all, the credentials of my husband. He's been skiing for 40 some odd years, downhill, cross country, back country. He served as a rescue ranger in the Tetons. He was the director of the for extreme skiing last year at Valdez, and so he comes with quite a few credentials. But he talks about a situation Bruce Reiser just talked about how Cebu last year with the death of Bart Reiser, they didn't want to come forth and admit to anything. And my husband talks about contrast the approach Alyeska has taken to the tragic death of Bart Reiser,
sure,
the approach Johnson & Johnson took to the poison Tylenol capsule scale several years ago. Johnson & Johnson clearly was not at fault, but they took the proactive approach, recalled all of their stock of a great personal expense. They did not return their stock to the shelves until they developed a new tamper-proof container and fully educated the public on the course of the original contamination. Such an approach exemplifies good management and response to health and safety issues. I believe Alyeska needs to learn something from the response Johnson & Johnson took to the Tylenol scare. At a time when Alyeska should be subjecting itself to serious introspective review of its health and safety and public relations policy, it is asking for further protection from liability. Under the terms of the Senate Bill 44 before you now, the court would likely issue a summary judgment indicating Bart's death was just one of the unavoidable inherent risks of skiing. Then he goes on, and I feel like there's an awful lot in his testimony that you should receive. Sorry that the time's so short, but I will send the complete testimony down to you.
Susan, sometimes you wonder about coincidence, but a teleconference that was in progress just dropped. We now can have the line for a little while longer, and if you feel that it would be your desire, you can continue to read your husband's testimony.
I'll do that. He put a lot of work into it, if you don't mind.
Certainly.
It's probably 5 minutes. My name is David Lowe. I'm unable to attend today and have asked that my wife and partner, Susan intermediate advanced skier, ski instructor, and most recently served as the ski mountaineering advisor for the Alaska Division of the National Ski Patrol. Last year, I directed the mountain safety program for the World Extreme Ski Championship at Valdez. During the early 70s, I worked for the National Park Service in Grand Teton National Park as a mountaineering ranger. In that position, I participated in or directed an average of 30 search and or rescue operations per year. 2 years ago, while climbing Denali, I was called upon to rescue 3 Japanese climbers who were exhausted and near death near the summit of Denali. With this broad background of experience, I am more aware of the hazards of outdoor experience in the mountains than many individuals. I have spent considerable time in 23 years of my adult life helping others in trouble in the mountains. I have gladly helped others and have found great joy in this effort, but also great sadness realizing that more than 90% of the deaths and suffering I have seen were preventable. We as a society too often are prone to say these risks cannot be controlled and are part of the inherent risk of these activities. The bill before you, Senate Bill 44, continues to reinforce the idea that nothing can be done about the inherent risk of skiing, and therefore the ski area should be held blameless in the event of an injury to a skier. Careful grooming, marking of hazards, avalanche control, frequent patrolling, and education of the public can do a great deal of good in reducing the risk of skiing so more people can safely enjoy the sport. Ski areas encourage young children to become involved in the sport with discounts, schools and youth programs, and inexpensive bus service to the area from metropolitan areas. If the ski areas want to entice our children to ski, they must do all that they can to create a safe environment. There will, of course, always be some risk that cannot be eliminated, and the skier must accept his share of that risk. The question is one of finding the appropriate balance. I believe Senate Bill 44 leans too much towards absolving the ski areas of any responsibility and in effect becomes a special interest piece of legislation to protect a very narrow group with a commercial interest rather than the general populace. We already have legislation that spells out the responsibilities of the ski area operators and the skier that adequately addresses the inherent risk of skiing. The only thing I can see that will come from this new bill is more protection for the ski area and less for the skiing public. The response of Alyeska to a recent skiing accident illustrates my point of how safety is being ignored to protect commercial interests. In December 1991, we had unusually high snowfall. On December 7th, Alyeska opened the mountain after doing the required avalanche control work. Ski patrolmen and skiers expressed some concern about having all areas open after some deaths. After some adults had difficulty climbing out of the waist to chest deep powder along the edges of the groomed run. One young skier, Bart Reiser, skied off the trail to enjoy the powder and never returned. The attending physician indicated that Bart died of hypothermia after considerable struggling to free himself from the deep snow. The ambulance driver found him soaking wet from exertion and snow that had melted into his clothing as he tried to free himself from what, to a young boy and even to adults, was considered bottomless powder. The response of Alyeska when they were notified of Bart's missing at 4:30 in the afternoon is indicative of the degree of care that Alyeska ski area has for the skiers in their care. The ski patrol dispatch took little note of the riser's concern and figured the boy was just getting in an extra run or two, as young boys will do. Even though a witness was available who could pinpoint exactly where Bart was last seen, no attempt was made by the management to use this witness to help patrollers sweeping the mountain carefully last seen before closing them out. It was only 2.5 hours later, at the insistence of the risers, that the witness was taken by snow machine to the site. The witness showed exactly where Bart had left the trail, and his body was found within a few moments.